phone in my hand. Still checking if you called, I'm double texting. Now, I've never been cool, no, burn that bridge when I got to it. Yeah, I'm on fire. I get so lost in your mind. Daddy, teach me this lesson 1,000 times. It's all blue. You know I feel it, and I bet you do. And that's on you. If you wanna take off, baby, you do. Put down your pain, but I'll pick it up again. It's all blue. That's why I fit in with you. You know I'm feeling it, I bet you do. And it's all blue. You know I'm feeling it, I bet you do. Till the song stopped playing, say I'm blue with or without you, baby. Sat in my car till the song stopped playing, say I'm blue with or without you, baby. It's all blue. You know I feel it, and I bet you do. That's on you. If you wanna take off, baby, you do you. I put down your pain, but I'll pick it up again. It's all blue. Swipe it in with you.
That was Camp Cope on The All Blue. I hope you guys are enjoying listening. That's a few artists from the West Side part of the world. Camp Cope was a big favourite of mine when I was a young person, and Georgia Mack living out in the West talking about Footscray Station and all these different places, and it kind of made us feel really connected. I'm just about to play the podcast series. So this is the first episode. This is a shout out to Bernadette Fitzgerald. I hope you're listening. Again, yeah, she's a senior producer at Footscray Arts and been there for 30 years, and she'll be talking about what it's like, what the changes are like in the West and how it's really diversified and been different. So have a little listen.
This podcast was recorded in Naam on the lands of the Wurundjeri and the Bongwurrung people of the Eastern Kulin Nations. Welcome to West Side Stories, a podcast dedicated to the voices of Melbourne's West. In this series, we speak with people who live, work and create in the Western suburbs. Community members, change makers and artists who are shaping the culture and identity of the West. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with someone who has been woven into the fabric of Footscray Community Arts for over 30 years. Bernadette Fitzgerald is a senior producer at FCA, where she's developed and managed countless exhibitions and community-based projects. Her background spans across theatre, contemporary dance, education, and arts management, and her impact on the organisation is unmistakable. I first met Byrne when I was just 8 years old, in one of FCA's school holiday programs. And funnily enough, when I returned as an adult nearly two decades later, she looked exactly the same. There's something timeless about her. Maybe it's her energy, maybe it's her commitment to community, or maybe it's just Byrne being Byrne. Today I'm excited to dive into her story, her work, and the legacy she's helped shape at Footscray Community Arts.
You know, coming to Footscray, at Footscray Community Arts, 30 years ago, but actually my relationship with Footscray started a lot earlier because I was on a dairy farm on the Bellin Peninsula and we come up to the cattle sales and my great uncle Mick was the station master at Footscray. Yeah, so we used to go and visit, you know, great uncle Mick and the 10 kids.
We're Catholics.
Yeah. I'm St. Bernadette. Yeah. We used to sort of come up and visit, but I think my sense of community come from a rural setting. We were in the country. You looked after your neighbours. You looked after your community. And that's what my family did. Yeah, we cared for the community. We knew all the neighbours. If someone needed help, it just happened. Like it was just, and, you know, if the scouts needed someone to pick up the paper drive as our fundraising, Dad would go and get it. Or, you know, the football club was really the centre of community and many 21sts and whatever, like it was a sense of community. But I remember playing sport. Like I played netball, my brothers played football, we'd all work in the canteen. Dad was the president. And we'd mind the neighbour's baby while they were playing. Like it was just such a sense of, it was such a sense of community. And, yeah, and I think I knew I'd always work in a community context. And then my training was community theatre and dance.
Your background, your history, your family, the idea of connection and community and working as a unity, basically. What was Footscray like, Footscray Arts, Footscray Community Centre like when you first came here? What were the organisations here?
Well, Footscray Community Arts, when I first arrived here, when I reflected on it, you know, like the Women's Circus were based here.
Yeah.
Western Edge was based here. There was a whole lot of smaller groups and projects that are now independent organisations. Mm. So in some ways Footscray was like that place of beginning for people always, and it's never lost its slight out of orderness. You know, I think that's actually really important. Like, I had the privilege of delivering our 40th birthday program, so that was in 2014. So that was a deep dive into the archives, and I realised, even though the languages of the time, our constitution, our mission, our values, everything has not changed.
Yeah.
It's just that the language of the time was different. It was still about, you know, representation by those that are not amplified, that don't often have a place outside of Footscray Community Arts. And when I, you know, think about activism, it was the trades union movement,
you know.
It was all of that protest and standing up, you know, standing up for the underdog, standing up for the workers. And so delivering the 40th birthday, just sort of having that sense of understanding, you know, the wonderful stories from the comrades, like George Seelaff, who was secretary of the Meat Workers Union, said for the workers that, you know, health and education was important, but access to art and culture was as equally as important.
Yeah.
And needed to be valued. And why should the workers not have access to art and culture? And, of course, when you look at the diversity of this area, even back then, you know, the stories reflected the diversity of the community.
Yeah.
So to actually, for the, all those artists and those community members to have a place that they could come where their stories were respected and they were amplified, yeah, it was just the diversity of Footscray meant that there was a diversity of programming that we had. And I suppose over my time it's really about the ways of migration into Footscray. When I first started here, it was very much a Vietnamese community. I mean, there was still that sort of sprinkling of the post-war Maltese, Italians, all the meat workers, you know, that were here and over time, but then the Vietnamese community come in and then the African diaspora moved in. So I suppose my engagement or my opportunities to platform people was very much driven by what is the community, you know, who is the community, who's there, not letting go of those communities, the older communities and concentrating on the newer communities, but it was about building relationships, and that's fundamental. It's actually about relationships, really.
So who is the community now of Footscray Arts and this?
Well,
and
I think, I think we've gentrified, as one would expect. It was the great sort of secret of 7 kilometres from the from the middle of the city.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that I so love here that I never want to see go is the industrial aesthetic of Footscray and the West.
Yeah.
Like, I love the cranes. I love the port. I love those containers. They're like this landscape of ever-changing artworks. Mm. And
a bit of a Jeffrey Smart kind of background.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's like in the gallery when you look out the big window and you see the containers, and yeah, that's really special. But I suppose probably the most important thing is, you know, we need to acknowledge that we're under a country of the Eastern Kulin Nations, and that, you know, even back in 1974, the First Nations or the First Peoples were acknowledged as part of creating that space and building that relationship.
Yeah.
So, you know, I absolutely acknowledge the privilege that I have of having access to elders like Nawit. Nawit's got many names now. Nawit, Professor Carolyn Briggs AM, who's Bumurang, and also Uncle Larry Walsh. Now, I first met Uncle Larry Walsh, who's a Tanarang elder, in the early days when I first started here, and he was at the Living Museum of the West. So that's when I first met him and worked closely with Uncle Larry, and I've just had access for 30 years to that extraordinary wisdom and, you know, the privilege of getting permission to work on this country. So, yeah, that's probably the highlight of all my work.
How do you see that those voices of Uncle Larry and Dr. Nawit as well have changed through those 30 years? Is there more interest in those people having art practices and artworks, or has that being pushed back in certain ways? I mean, Footscray Arts in itself has built a whole new space, which is in contingency with the Indigenous Board. But do you see that reflected in the artwork and the community of Footscray Arts and the West today, or do you think that's changed a lot?
You know, we were talking about this the other day, and I think about the community and what the community wants is they want access to the First Nations community and particularly the elders. So we need to protect the elders. And I often think about the elders and they're, you know, constantly looking for that sort of next generation. But, you know, it's acknowledging the past and what is underpinning the practice of, you know, the young First Nations people today. And, you know, that's really important. And I think, you know, there's such waves of change within the community and also in a political sense. And, you know, with treaty and also with the referendum. And, you know, I saw firsthand the devastation of that, you know, and I feel like the voices are being amplified and they're also being carried by that next generation of First Nations artists that respect the elders and acknowledge where they and the community have come from and the work of all those elders in the past that have paved the way into the future. So, yeah, I'm pretty lucky.
You are. You've had an amazing career here, and it's beautiful to see that it's still, what is it, 51 years today of Footscray Arts, 52
years.
Yeah,
1974, yeah.
And so you've been here 30 years of that and only for the 20 years it was established. So how do you know the history of when it was first established, why it came about? I said you've talked previously about the meat workers and the idea that that really interesting point that you made, which is that as well as health and education, arts and culture is really paramount, which kind of feels like it's fallen to the wayside a bit of the day. How did they fight for that in those days? Did they talk to Parliament? Did they just take this land?
I think the original building for the Footscray Community Arts was through, you know, the support of Victoria University, who is still a long-term partner, was in an old detergent factory at 80A Ballarat Road. So that's where it all started. Wow. And I think maybe 79 we actually come to this building, which was an abandoned building. So it was a ham and bacon curing factory. And the bluestone building, like Henderson House, was the residence of a family.
Yeah, yeah.
That ran that. And there was also a metal worker, a metal, scrap metal storage. There was a whole lot of things. And I think at some stage there was some consideration to pull this down, which often happens. And really it was community activists and the trades union and Footscray Community Arts and also support from the local government to save this building.
Yeah.
Because ideally this was going to become the centre of arts and culture in the in Footscray and the precinct down in Melbourne's west. And I think we were really one of the first community arts organisations to be set up. I think I think the local government gave us $3,000 and I think the federal government gave us $3,000. That was like $6,000 was the first funding. But, you know, when I think about, you know, I mentioned George Seelaff, who was extraordinary. He would literally do chook raffles in the Footscray market. Like I hear these amazing stories and, you know, talking to some of the original board members and, you know, they'd say, you know, George had come towards you and he's put his hand out to shake your hand and inside his hand was a packet of raffle tickets. You had to go and sell them basically for the chook raffle, like the wheel, spin the wheel. And he was raising money to get a grand piano here. So the grand piano that we have here at Footscray was raised through raffles at the Footscray market.
Oh my God.
You know, they're such great stories.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I was really, I was really lucky to be able to dive into the archives and get a sense of the history.
The history of this place. That's amazing. And do you feel that is, I mean, it's changing with how the West is growing, you know, as we say, it's about gentrification, it's moving, it's evolving. Do you think FCA can keep up with the demand of what people want from the community and there's a connection between the West and here? Or do you feel that FCA can be a bit of a bubble and doesn't quite connect with maybe the direct community around us and the residents?
It's absolutely our first priority that we need to connect to community.
And
often think about Uncle Kutcher Edwards when he talks about power of listening and the power of deep listening. It's not just listening, it's about deep listening and seeking out community. And, you know, that's really important. And also for the new communities that are coming in here, like, you know, I get a bit of a shock every now and again when I see the high density housing that's going up around here. Yeah. And who are that community? What's their relationship? And that's where I think Lango, our new outdoor performance space, is going to be really fundamental because, you know, it is designed both to honour the country that we're on, Kulin Nations, and also the Maribyrnong, which is a really significant river. For the first time after our old amphitheatre, finally the site will be accessible. Yeah. Like it's a fully accessible site. All the plantings are based on the six seasons of the Kulin Nation.
Yeah, wow.
So it's so significant, that site, and really central to what it is about community gathering, and you need to bring that community to come in here.
Yeah.
Community doesn't necessarily come. You need to go out to that community and then invite them back in.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a fundamental because that's about relationship building, and how we program in that space is going to be really important, you know, into the future.
Yeah.
But also, you know, there's opportunities for the new communities that are coming in to high density, the high density housing, could be double income, no kids. Like, what's your relationship to them? You need to create a space for that community as well to come in and support us and the broader community and have an opportunity for learning, you know, about the community. And, so I think Lango is going to be really significant, as a development because it'll be, you know, there's huge growth out here, so it's a really significant infrastructure project.
Yeah.
And we're very excited about it. It'll be amazing when it's finished.
Take its time, but it'll happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And can you tell us of some exhibitions that you've done that are connected with community? Because it's a centre which focuses on marginalised communities' voices, those of queer and LGBTIQ plus people that have a disability, people of colour, and the Indigenous community. Can you tell us just, I mean, you've done so many events here at FCA. If you can think of a highlight one and one that you felt like you really connected with an artist, with a community member, and how that changed the relationship that FCA had with that community through the art.
I think one of the highlights was probably Eel Trap.
Yeah.
Which was a project with Science Gallery in Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
So a long conversation. It was obviously a First Nations project. And I had known Marie Clark for a very long time. Yeah. From the time that she was actually even at Koori Heritage Trust and had known her for a long time. And Science Gallery in Melbourne had a larger exhibition, Disposable, and we're looking for a First Nations context, so they did come to us. But part of that is that all the staff did cultural competency training, like they really immersed themselves in what was First Nations here at Footscray.
Yeah.
They talked to the elders, they talked to the Indigenous advisory group. They obviously knew Marie Clark, and Marie mentored her nephew, Mitch Mahoney, to do this project.
Wow.
And the vision was to have a woven eel trap. The end result was a woven eel trap that was 11 metres long.
Wow.
So, but it was all tied to the process of how is that created. It was fully biodegradable. So there was a process of going out and gathering the river growing the river reeds and the bark. We got permission from Jajawarang to gather red gum, and we made rope. So there was a whole way of listening how from country to create something for country.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. And then there was a whole public program where we had community members come in, so they learnt to weave, they learnt to make the rope.
Yeah, wow.
And they helped actually construct the whole eel trap, which 11 metres is really large, and it was in sections. yeah, but it was like the river reeds were collected from the Maribyrnong.
Yeah.
You know, it was just such a deeply powerful exhibition. And then as part of that exhibition where, you know, it was like a gallery, the artwork was being built in situ, so it was actually being built. So community had access to both the process. They had that chance to have access to the artist, which I think is really important. So sometimes the white box of the gallery is not very friendly.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the language of the arts is inaccessible.
Yeah.
But this was something that was created in situ, like in the gallery. So it was built in the gallery, and then it was actually launched into the river.
Oh, my gosh.
So we actually launched it into the river. So part of the launch was actually taking it down to the river. So there was ceremony around that. And the old bollards from the original pier in the river were still there, so they were selected to be the tethering points.
Right.
Yeah. And it was right on the edge. And we had, you know, Annie Vic Morphy Walsh come in and helped with the weaving, and Donna Blackhole, like amazing weavers that are incredibly generous.
Yeah.
As well. And it, you know, I think, you know, Carolyn Briggs said, like the eel traps and the river reed, their purpose is to cleanse a river, like they're a filter.
Yeah.
So it was sort of really interesting to put it in the river and then check every day what it had gathered. And mainly what it had gathered was fast food containers and water bottles.
Yeah.
And blue wrapping tape, you know, that hard wrapping tape. So to actually collect that. So, in fact, this beautiful big woven eel trap was sitting in the river, was actually collecting all the rubbish out of the river. So it's sort of like the river reed's original purpose.
Yeah.
Which is about cleansing.
Yeah.
The river was actually doing that. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was biodegradable. So I just watched as it degraded over time.
Was that filmed, the filming of the curation?
Yeah, yeah. And actually Science Gallery Melbourne have, if you go Eel Trap, they have a video about the making of it. And, yeah, you can see the community. We had schools come in. We had lots of people come in and just community members. And, you know, to have that chance to learn and to understand how to weave, how to use materials.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the materiality was just so beautiful. Yeah. And, yeah, it was such a privilege. Yeah.
Because Vicky does a lot of weaving courses here, and if she used to when I was working here do that, and they sell out.
Yeah, really, and obviously her daughters, because her daughters, Isabel and Hannah, Morphy Walsh, Uncle Larry's daughters, are amazing weavers.
Yeah,
and, you know, every now and again you get a sense of the seasons, although the seasons are a little bit tricky at the moment because obviously climate change is impacting on the seasons.
Yeah.
And out collecting grasses for their weaving. And, yeah, they're both amazing weavers, so, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's amazing. That's an incredible. That's like such a recycle of a connection from the land with the local people, then with community, to then resolve back in again, like a kind of cycle of art.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And you know, there's so many inherent messages in that process. You're asking me about how does art and culture work. Well, that's a prime example of the opportunity to learn, the opportunity to listen, to learn skills, to actually participate in the making of an artwork or an exhibition, which is quite different to just walking in and looking at something on the wall.
Yeah,
it was actually participatory, and I think that that's something that's really, really important at Footscray, is about making art accessible and how does the community participate in that and have learnings. And if you look what's happening in a climate justice sense, that, like, it's just ticks many boxes and saying, you know, this is the rubbish that's in our river. This is what we're catching. This is what we have to do.
Yeah.
And we need to be responsible for that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it was probably one of my favourite. Yeah, one of my favourite exhibitions. And I think that's what Footscray does. It's like the exhibitions or the performances or the projects that we do have that fundamental rigour around community engagement, community participation, maybe challenging things as well and making people think really deeply
about stuff. And do you think that's what makes, I mean, FCA in itself is a very special organisation, but, you know, you live in the east and come out to the west for work. How do you think the western suburbs differs from the rest of Melbourne? What's its uniqueness to the rest of the other suburbs around?
Well, I mean, it's always going to sit in the diversity space.
Yeah.
You know, there's such a richness of culture here in the West, and even though it's gentrifying, as you would expect that it would, hopefully won't lose that. And I think we have an absolutely vital role in that to create this space for that community to gather. And, you know, people sort of talk about saying you can't even afford to rent in Footscray anymore. You know, so people are going up further west, so therefore we need to go out further west and make that connection to community.
It's really
important.
No, it is really changing. I mean, you look at Brimbank Council, which is a huge council space from Braybrook all the way out to basically Mount Macedon, which has to deal with all that. And then Maribyrnong is quite a small in comparison. But I'm just thinking of, you know, the West as well. Do you feel that because of the gentrification that people are going to be pushed out, and that is going to change the diversity of what we have here and the uniqueness of the West, from the industrial to all the immigrants coming into the space, bringing their food and culture and music into this area?
Yeah, I was just reflecting on that. When I first started here, I was the minority.
Yeah, wow.
Anglo. Woman,
yeah.
Like when I first started here, and I have seen that shift, you know, as well. But I think that, we need to hold on to that. But we need to be the space where those communities and all those platforms of diversity, are respected, a space for them to gather, a place for them for storytelling, and that's really important. But still, you know, as you know, you go into Footscray to eat. across cultures. Although there are wine bars and smart coffee shops now, so
yeah,
it has sort of changed.
A little bit.
But, you know, I think it's always the rule is where's the community? Where are the community eating? And then you go there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's just, yeah, so that's extraordinary, you know. It's like I think the food, and I think that's what draws people to the West. And I think it's the same in Western Sydney. Like if I ever go to Sydney, I go straight out to Western Sydney and I'm home.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like it's just there's something about that bubble of culture, community, and it's always a little bit out of order or a little bit – there's always a bubble of something going on and, yeah, it's alive.
Yeah. A little bit chaotic, but kind of magical.
But I sort of love that chaos is good. Yeah. And I think sometimes in chaos, it's actually about change.
Yeah.
People learning.
Yeah. And they've done other exhibitions. I mean, while I was working here, you did What I Wish I Told You as well, which as staff members, we all actually learn some basic sign language, which was really amazing.
Yeah. Too. And I think that's actually really important. So, how do we, as a staff, respect the community and what the community needs. So what does cultural safety mean? What's culturally safe for community and the deaf, deaf and disabled community? So all of the staff did Auslan training, which was really important.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do. It's almost like TILDA, the Trans and Gender Diverse Film Festival, which I've had an association with since 2017.
Wow.
Where we did workshops on consent and the language and understanding the community. And, like, we've got TILDA coming up this year. And
can you explain to us a little bit what TILDA is and what maybe people...
Yeah, well, the TILDA Film Festival is the only one in the Southern Hemisphere, so it's Trans and Gender Diverse Film Festival. Wow. So it's by, for, and... a celebration of the trans and gender diverse community. And like even in nowadays in that sort of cultural context of what's happening geopolitically, it's a nightmare. There's incredible vulnerability in that community. But well, it was about building the relationship with the community.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we did. And then it was have a sense of how does this space become culturally safe for that community. I mean, I think when TILDA first started, it was maybe Trades Hall, North Melbourne. I can't quite recall, but they've had an association with Footscray since 2017. COVID was a bit of a difficult patch. And post-COVID was going in and, you know, rebuilding that relationship. And but it's also, you know, it's about joy and celebration of this community and extraordinary films and engagement. It's... Yeah, one of the favourite projects that I've worked on.
One of your favourite projects.
And that'll be at the end of the year. I think we've got a launch coming up in September and then it'll be late October, which, of course, normally it's earlier in the year, but it's called There's a Building Project.
And that's affected things a little bit.
Do you
feel that the building, that new performance space outside, you were saying before that it's hopefully going to bring more people in. Do you think that's going to give more space for larger theatre productions and music events, and or is that going to clash a little bit with Maribyrnong Council's new art space that they're trying to create too?
I think our focus will be on live music and community gathering.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think when we look back at our old amphitheatre, like it had such a long history of community festivals, music events. Woman Jika, Welcome in Language, that was always really important. But the beauty is now that the whole site is going to be fully accessible and that gives me the greatest joy. So I think, you know, I think the live music industry has had a really tough time and there's an opportunity for us to partner and support and look after the musicians, and I think that'll be a draw card. And Maribyrnong will have a much larger performance space on their project. And, you know, we don't have the money to... for the level of infrastructure, obviously, to do more performance projects. They'll be much more intimate, but they'll also be about creative development and having that space, I think, for creative development.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about Woman? You were just referring to all about Woman Jika, what that is and how that works and what that means. And
Woman Jika is Welcome in Language.
Yeah.
And Woman Digger, traditionally we would do at the start of the year. It was about ceremony and to give us permission to do what we do, give us permission to do the work that we do on this country. So yeah, it's very much driven by the elders and the Indigenous advisory group and our respective Indigenous program managers.
Yeah.
Through time. So really it was just a celebration of First Nations art across exhibitions, across music, about community gatherings, food.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the most important thing about it was both a welcome to this country and permission for us to do what
yeah,
we do
yeah.
here. Yeah.
I'll wrap this up because it's your birthday today and we want to make sure we don't take up too much of your time. But is there any last thoughts that you have about discussions about what do you see FCO being in the future for communities? Do you feel like it's already evolved in so many different ways? You told us about the Tilda Festival with the trans community. We've got ArtLife Group as well, which we haven't even discussed as well, which I'll get in another member to talk about that, Opal. But do you see it expanding to more places and more communities and more artwork, or do you think it's going to more focus on building up better community relationships? Is it about bigger and more, or is it about smaller and more connected?
I think it's probably a combination of both, but I think what we need is to value community more, and I think there's a real need in community to find support and build relationships. And it's through that sort of sense of gathering there becomes a sort of a deep understanding of what it is to be part of a community.
You know,
I reflect on, you know, raised by a village. The village is, that notion of the village when you know, I'm a mother, so how I got a very strong sense of that from my rural beginnings is that you were supported, you had a sense of community.
Yeah.
And I think it's absolutely vital, and I think people lose a sense of community. And I think there's power in community coming together in a civic context as well. Like, you know, it's about connection, it's about learning. And I think art and culture, those activities are a really powerful tool to communicate and also to challenge you in some ways, but really fundamental. We used to talk about Footscray, you know, welcome to the family. You can never leave the family.
Yeah.
You're part of the family, and Footscray becomes a family where the community can come and gather. And, yeah, that I think will be really important in the future.
Yeah.
But we have to create that space where that can happen. And that will be a priority. Yeah.
So we're going to watch this space and see what happens.
Watch this space.
It's going to go off. We've been with Bernadette Fitzgerald, who's a senior producer at FCA for the past 30 years. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
It's all right.
And your wisdom and insight is incredible, and you need to know that more. So thank you.
You've been listening to West Side Stories, a podcast dedicated to the voices and stories of Melbourne's West. As we wrap up this episode, I want to extend my heartfelt thanks to my partner, Ruben Cumming, who engineered the podcast and composed the theme music. I'd also like to thank Footscray Community Arts for the generous use of their podcast studio and for supporting the vibrant, inspiring community of artists and storytellers who joined me throughout this first series. It's been a privilege to share their voices with you. Thank you for listening and for being part of West Side Stories' journey. Until next time, see ya.
Thanks for that. So that was the first episode of West Side Stories with Bernadette Fitzgerald. I hope you enjoyed that. We have a series of 4 episodes, which I'll be playing for the next 4 weeks as I'm taking over this time slot for the Moving Image. And I really hope you guys enjoyed that. We're just going to play one more song before we head out of the studio. And I'll just play a few community announcements and then we'll play a song. I just want to let everyone know that one of the other songs, which is by Cam Cope as well, kind of inspired the name for this series. So, yeah, I hope you all enjoy it, and we'll speak soon.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to TransFamily are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. TransFamily is a 3CR supporter.
Beautiful, but that don't make very much sense. but yours is a funeral I'd fly to from anywhere.
And that was the famous Camp Cope. Wow, we love that track. Yeah, The West Side Stories, that's what inspired it. And we'll just play one more track before we go out. Now, this is a band of our mates called Midnight Violet, and they've been playing for about a year or so. Amazing band, super cool, super funky. They've been actually rehearsing in the basement studio, the same place where I recorded this podcast series. So it's a bit of an artistic collab. And yeah, a shout out to our friend Josh, who's the bass player in the band. But here we go. Have a listen to Midnight Violet. Now, we've got to go. You just listened to West Side Stories, and thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be back next Saturday from 11 to 12.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.